What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. I am your host, Nick Pollock, and joining me is, oh, what a lovely guest this man is. I can't believe he made time this week to come on the show.
What a surprise.
What a surprise. Good to see you, Eno.
Good to see you, too.
So I ask every single week when we do this, you know, the whole basis of it is like, look, if there's certain things we want to talk about with pitching in general, or if there's certain pitchers, do you have something in mind? Otherwise, you know, there's always stuff to go to. And you said, Nick, I've got one bone to pick with you. And I don't know what this is. I'm so excited. What do you got? What is it? What did I do?
You have besmirched my name and misrepresented my work.
Oh, no. What have I done? What have I done, Eno?
You said that I don't use height adjusted VAA in Stuff Plus. Now,
I thought it was VAA. We went over this last week on The Craft.
I don't have it in it, but the way that I say the what way that I explain it, yeah. But it's in it. This is
wait. Is it in it or is it not in it?
It's not in it as a thing.
Okay,
but it's in it. The things that are in
like the release height is.
Yeah. So the most like the three most important features in our model
right
are our release point, which was I think the one of the biggest.
Okay. I am so sorry. I will go on.
The biggest every like, podcast steps forward in Stuff Plus research has been how important release point is.
Right.
And I think the reason is HAVAA. So, but I think this is still important to talk about because HAVAA is high adjusted vertical approach angle. That is the approach angle of the pitch coming in, but high adjusted for its height that's coming in at the plates because you can have flatter things at the top of the zone. Somebody that just lived at the top of the zone could have, could have good VAA, but not great HAVAA.
Right.
I think this is a little bit like saying ex-woba, but I know this is a hitter thing. Stick with me. But it's like a little bit like saying ex-woba is nice, but does it have barrels in it? Well, it has barrels in it because ex-woba looks at the launch angle and exit velocity of every ball and assigns a sort of likeliness of outcome to it. Right. And that's what Stuff Plus does. And so since release point is so important, you know, what it's saying is we care a lot about the release point. We care a lot about the ride and we use the machine basically uses those to impute an HAVAA.
Yeah. That makes
we could probably produce an expected HAVAA using Stuff Plus, but we don't put it in there because of double counting. Now, people have made different decisions on this. Driveline just came out with their newest Stuff Plus, and they put HAVAA in it as a feature in the model. Right. I'm worried that that's double counting. Like, what if you put barrels back into ex-woba? I feel like you might double count barrels. And the reason why it looks good to do that in the model is because barrels by themselves are the most predictive thing.
Sure.
Right? And I think HAVAA is on that level in pitching where if you want to look at one thing that's not in, that's not Stuff Plus, you just want to look at one thing, you've got like your Fantastic Four has HAVAA in it for good reason. But the reason I had a bone to pick with you that I didn't understand it when I was watching was that you were talking about Bailey Ober. And Bailey Ober does not have good HAVAA.
No, he doesn't.
And
no,
so I just
wanted to talk about Bailey Ober with you today. Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, I've got some. So I'm talking about Bailey Ober.
That's okay.
But so, your own Stuff Plus, your own ELV Stuff Plus has Bailey Ober's fastball as a 69. Which is not good.
As a 70th percentile.
No. Like, I don't know, whatever it is, like where 100 is average.
Right. Are you talking about the today's fastball thing I sent you?
No, there's like you guys are working on a PLV Stuff Plus.
Correct.
Yes.
And that we have that as about 74 for Ober. Is that right?
Yeah. And I don't think it could be percentiles because I saw numbers over.
Yeah, no. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So your own PLV Stuff Plus doesn't love it. And so what I try to do is find comps, and I hate the fact that your HAVAA and and Alex's are different, but whatever. I tried.
I don't know why, but I mean, I think it's just how we do it.
Yeah.
Things like we scale it differently for us. I think he does like a plus and a minus. And I think we generally have it as like, just like as one is the baseline.
Uh-huh.
I think is what we do. I got to talk to Kyle Bland about that. I don't want to
actually that.
I feel so terrible that I put out misinformation about your stuff. So I'm like already like now I'm not going to say anything about it.
No, that's fine.
I hate that.
No, I mean, it's obviously a nuanced thing. It's not in it, but it's in it.
No, I get it now because you're essentially saying, look, release height's in it. And
release height's really important and movement's in it. And so if you have release height and movement, you have HAVA.
Yeah, exactly. You have it essentially constructed. The parts of it are inside of it.
Right.
Yeah. And that makes all of the sense.
So I think you're right. I think he's centered around zero and you're centered around one because you have like a 0.6 HAVA. Yes.
Yeah, minus minus 0.4 would be what we would think.
And he has a minus 0.23. I think it might also be scaled differently in terms of maybe size.
Sure, but that's the general idea.
Anyway, so what I'd looked for was people that were around him in HAVAA, mm-hmm. around him in extension, because he does have elite extension.
Oh, yeah, that's his thing. Yeah, 7.3 on his fastball against the Yankees last night.
And then it was hard to comp everything, but I looked at vertical release point and vertical movement too. But vertical movement should be a little bit handled by HAVAA. So I started with extension and HAVAA, and then I grouped these guys. And these are the fastballs that were most like Bailey Obers.
Oh, yes. Okay, wait, can I guess some?
Yeah.
Bailey Falter.
No, I didn't find him.
Dang it. Is this not with velocity or is it with velocity?
Oh, yes, with velocity. But yeah, I guess Falter could have been on here. I could look up Falter right now.
Yeah, because I've considered him like the same mold almost.
Falter was actually where I looked when I was worried that we undervalued HAVAA. But and we don't have a great stuff plus number for him, but we do have a better stuff plus number for Falter than you would expect given his velo. So velo is still very important in our model.
Yeah, extension is there for Falter. McGill, Tyler McGill, I've thought about it too.
Just harder. Falter's extension is even further than
yeah. And it's like at 90 or so.
But he also has a above zero HAVA.
Oh yeah, right. He's not as steep as Ober is.
Yeah.
But yeah, Tyler McGill is the other one, just comes in harder. It just works command.
He's a teammate of Obers.
No, not Trevor. Tyler. Ty Lord.
No, I'm saying, I'm giving you a hint now.
So hold on. Not Paddock. Don't tell me
it's Paddock. It is Paddock.
Oh, gosh.
Paddock has 7 foot extension over 7.2.
Yeah.
Paddock's HAVAA is minus 0.4. Yeah. Bailey Obers is minus 0.23. Vertical movement is identical, the same, both 17 inches IVB. Vertical release point, and this is why I think Ober's so weird. Paddock's vertical release point is higher than Bailey Ober's. I need to look this up too. I have a kind of a weird comp for Ober. It's Sean Hagelli.
Oh, well, I mean, super, super lanky guy. Yeah, super tall. Hagelli doesn't get the extension though, does he?
He doesn't, and he throws a sinker, so he has really steep VA.
Right.
Like, doesn't it actually, it gets good again when you go all the way the other way, right?
Yeah, well, right. That's actually what I was thinking about with Paul Skeens, remember, from I think last week or so.
All right. The other ones are Zach Thompson and Sean Manaea.
Oh, Manaea. That's an interesting one.
Yeah. Manaea's IVB doesn't fit.
Yeah,
but
it's a 16 for Obers, by the way, and there's in the start against the Royals, for example, on the 29th.
What was that?
That's just fine. IVB for Obers four seamer.
Yeah, 16.
Yeah, 15.8. Yeah.
Oh, okay. And on Chambers is 17.2 for the year. So is it going down?
I guess so. I mean, 15.7 was the one for the Yankees for Ober. But I never considered him a 17 though. This fits for ours at least. Which is so weird.
Zach Thompson is 7 foot extension, 5.9 vertical release to versus 6, 15 vert. So he might fit current Ober better.
Yeah.
And minus 0.37 VAA. So according to Alex Chamberlain, that would be like a 0.5 or a 0.4 for you.
Sure. Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, with Ober, it's what's interesting too is that obviously home runs are the big thing. You know, 3 home runs against the Royals in 2 games. And that was the major thing. And last night, that is Tuesday night against the Yankees, we were all terrified about it. We didn't know what we would get. It was just one home run, a porch shot from Gleyber Torres.
But it wasn't actually a very usable start.
Right. And the reason for me was, what is Bailey Ober's best pitch? It's not his four seamer. For us, yeah, it's his changeup. It's like a 6 PLV changeup, which is just unheard of. And he threw 9 of them against the Yankees. He actually leaned into cutters and sliders instead, which weren't really that great. They were more out of the zone than usual, so he had a lot of walks. But what the heck? The changeup is so good, Bailey Ober. And that's actually the difference between Paddock and Ober, for those who are listening. Being like, oh, how are you?
Yeah. You know, that's well, the Paddock thing. Has a good changeup, too.
It's not as consistent as Ober's. I mean, that's the Vulcan change, right? Ober's is one of the more underrated changeups, I think, in the game. We don't really consider Ober as an elite changeup guy, but it is truly an elite changeup. And I think that's what makes his four-seamer upstairs and how he locates that much better, is because he has this changeup that he pairs with it. The slider and cutter are additions this year, better than they were last year, but it's really a changeup, I think, that ties the whole thing together for Ober.
Are the Yankees right-handed heavy? And this is actually irrelevant because of the twins. Yeah. It's the Twins we're talking about. They're a little bit righty heavy.
Yeah, they are. Absolutely. I've seen Ober still throw that changeup, though. And actually,
right. In fact, I just did a search. Yeah. Minnesota leads the league in right-on-right changeups.
That doesn't surprise me. Also, you have Pablo Lopez on that team.
Yeah.
You know?
But, you know, where do you stand on that? Because changeups supposedly have reverse platoon splits. It's like something that I've seen with the sweepers, that some people have the sweeper still throw it against lefties because, you know, they're like, yeah, it's worse, but it's still good.
It's still my best pitch, you know.
Yeah, so I have to
use it. The thing about changeups is, I mean, I think it depends on the changeup too, right? If you have a very lateral one, I think you're gonna run into more trouble. Righty on righty. But if it has depth, I mean, it goes down. Pitches that go north-south are just generally more agnostic to the batter handedness. Mm-hmm. And those that are lateral are more, you know, you don't want to go from the handle to the barrel, essentially.
Yeah.
Right. You want to go from the barrel to the handle. So
Minnesota has the 6th most arm side movement on their changeups on those right on right ones.
That's interesting. Bailey Ober's, I think,
Cubs have the least more depth. And the least Guardians.
Well, who are those guys?
Oh, and San Francisco's 3rd, and I think San Francisco's, there's a lot of splitters, right?
Let me think about that. I mean, you're thinking of Keaton Wynn. You're thinking of, I mean,
but I have changeup listed and not splitters.
So Webb has a ton of drop in his changeup.
So that must be all Webb.
Yeah. I mean, Kyle Harrison, maybe, I don't know. I still don't believe in Kyle Harrison, even though he like spotted changeups last night and it was still just a mediocre start.
Like, isn't that weird how you do something like this and you're like, Minnesota, right on right changeups, Pittsburgh threw 24, Minnesota's thrown 354. But you're like, well, that's because of the guys they have.
Yeah, but, right.
But Minnesota acquired those guys, you know?
That's true. I mean, then again, if you can get Pablo Lopez.
Right on right changeups.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing, though, is a lot of times we think about this. Like, I remember actually the Mariners, everyone says, oh, man, the Mariners are this team that's like so much into four-seamer fastballs. They're like, no, our guys just happen to be four-seamer fastball guys.
Yeah, I guess so.
You know, we are not actually going in the minors saying, do this. You know, here's Emerson Hancock, by the way, not that, you know.
Yeah.
The Yankees with their guys like Will Warren and Clark Schmidt and Michael King, we said, well, this is what they do. I remember talking about this in an earlier podcast with you about, well, they just assess, are you a four-seamer guy or are you a sinker guy?
Right, yeah.
And if you are a sinker guy, that means this. If you're a four-seamer guy, it means that. We think about the Marlins. Like, cool, those are changeup guys. Well, they just generally have found guys that throw good changeups. Maybe there is something about them. Like, Ryan Weathers now has a good changeup. Maybe there is something in the water there that is developing it. But when it comes to the Twins, I don't know. Joe Ryan's splitter is not really that great. It's helping out, but it's not so good. Pablo Lopez already had his changeup. Mm-hmm. Bailey Ober, it's always been there.
And Paddock because of their changeups?
I think Pablo's just dope.
Yeah, right. Yeah, they weren't looking for that. And Paddock was just cheap, right?
Yeah, he was just a free thing that they just added or whatever, essentially.
Yeah.
And also, it's I don't know how much I really buy into Paddock's splitter, the Vulcan change, which again, I just never understand. I just can't wrap my head around someone doing a Vulcan change instead of a normal split change.
Like, I mean, when Paddock came up, I lost my friggin' mind. I saw his first start. I wrote a 1,000-word piece about Paddock's changeup because I saw his debut.
Yeah.
And the thing that I was so excited about was that he was able to front door the changeup to lefties.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Right.
And it was so beautiful that I was out in center field waiting for my kids to leave the bouncy house.
Mm-hmm.
And I could see.
Sorry. Not a phrase I expected you to say.
I mean, I was there as a fan.
Yeah.
And I could see that he was like throwing this changeup at the batter's faces.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like coming across the zone for, you know, like a front door two seamer. And so I thought, okay, Paddock has this like legendary command of his changeup. Like,
yeah,
this is like really good command. So I'm surprised to say you don't like that one, because I would assume that a Vulcan change would lessen the amount of command you have because of how it comes off your fingers.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's one of those things of with every splitter, generally, you're going to feel it. Or you're not. And
I mean, sometimes it's just like you've been throwing it your whole life, right?
It is true. I mean, I've still seen many games with Paddock just doesn't have his changeup. I'm like, oh, cool. Great. It's one of those.
Awesome. Yeah, I wonder how much of that is like all the other work he's done on other pitches.
It's possible. But I mean, again, I look at just like how you grip that thing, right? You're making the whole Vulcan thing. So you're using your middle finger and your ring finger to throw that as opposed to your index and your middle. And sure, you could say there's more even spread of force because you have two fingers on each as opposed to one.
It's probably
one.
Coming off your ring finger. Instead.
But right. It's like sliding. It's more pronated. And generally what I believe when it comes to with changeups in general, the more, and well, actually splitters in general, the more over the top you are, the better. You want to really lean down on that and tug down. And if you're doing the Vulcan, to me, that feels like you're going to be sliding off more, kind of like a circle change as you do it there, right? So I don't know. I mean, works for guys. That's great. It always surprised me a bit. But I mean, watching Paddock starts, there's just not enough going on. And Ober's changeup is better. His slider and cutter are better. Also, I believe more in the command, really, of the four seamer in general. It's actually been a little bit worse for Ober this year, slightly. He hasn't been painting the top of the zone as red, but I think that Ober generally does that. I mean, I called him Bailey Ober Rizzi for a bit.
He has
because he was doing the same thing.
He has a more sort of chase, like more waist high, like not waist, like waist, W A S T E, right? Like he has more waist pitches high, like
YM locker saying, as opposed to like
high pitches.
Oh, okay, so yeah, non-competitive upstairs. Does Paddock or Ober?
Ober.
I'm saying that no, Ober's coming further down in the zone more than we want.
Oh, okay.
Which is I see
some in that middle third.
Yeah, YM Locke, I think, is going up this year. And by the way, there's a large debate. I'm curious where you stand on this. I'm gonna ask you this question after this break. Eno, we have on our player pages, I think one of my favorite things that we have this location numbers. It was actually really cool, by the way, in our game logs. We now have updated them, made them really fast so that you can look up by pitch and locations by game just really quickly. Saying curveball, where has it been? Has he changed? And instead of just looking at strike zone plots, you can actually just go to location section and just see by game, high, low, whatever it is, right?
So this is on that player page.
Yep. And YM lock is defined to me as the y-axis middle. So the y-axis is the vertical one. And vertically, is it high, middle, or low? So thus, it is YM location. However,
wait, many... Again?
Sorry?
YM lock.
YM lock. So there's low lock, there's high lock.
Oh, YM lock is... Why don't you just call it middle
location,
middle,
but it's on the Y-axis as opposed to the X-axis.
I see. YM, like middle Y.
Right.
Okay.
And Alex Fast has pushed back on this forever. Okay. To a point that he was talking to a staffer and they called him over and they said, Alex, why is this YM lock and not XM lock? Because it's lateral, right? It's generally, it's like defining a lateral zone, a horizontal zone, but because it's vertical middle, I call it YM lock. Where do you stand on this? Should that be XM lock or YM lock, you know?
So the M refers to a vertical.
No, that M is middle, right? So like it's the cross of the zone.
It's not middle. It's not the middle third of the zone vertically.
Right. Well, it's the middle. It is vertically the middle third of the zone.
Okay. So I think I like YM lock because it's middle refers to the vertical dimension. It's not top in the vertical dimension. It's not bottom in the middle vertical dimension. Right. It's middle in the vertical dimension.
Right.
It was XM lock. That might be high middle, low middle, middle, and low middle.
Exactly.
You'd be talking about X.
Yes. You see the light. Alex, stop DMing me. Okay, cool. Just wanted to thank you so much.
So one thing about high lock is it have to be in the zone or not?
It's anything that isn't middle and it's anything above middle.
So anything. So you can have waist pitches in there at WAST.
Yes, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's generally why you never see a third or higher for any of the M locks because it's a much narrower band. The low and highs or the inside or outsides, whatever you want to say, go outside of the zone too, right? They really go far. While the other,
I think that over is you see the location chart tells you everything, I think,
right? Yeah, so for over, he needs to get a little bit higher up again. And actually, you talked about Sean Jelly, this is something I think about a ton where when you think of these super lanky guys. Tyler Glasnow, Taylor Youngman of old time, and Tyler McGill too. It's hard for them to get better command generally because it's just a longer arm circle, right? Mm-hmm. It's rare for them to be the elite command guys. And it's actually been one of those skills that's kind of strange for Bailey Ober that he has in the past been very consistent of locating upstairs.
I think
it's something to consider.
Yeah, I think it's that location ability, but then there is something weird about his delivery.
Mm.
I would think that Stuff Plus would capture it or HAVA would capture it. It's like, you know what it is we tried to put height in our model.
I was going to ask about that with location.
Height of the pitcher.
Well, right. That's what I mean. Height of the pitcher and location plus to see if there's any sort of correlation to consistency.
Oh, I was thinking even put height in to Stuff Plus to see if like the pitcher's height matters, you know, because you could see as a batter, you step to the plate and you look at Bailey Ober and you're like, oh my God, this guy's a monster.
Right.
And I think you would kind of assume that he would pitch like really vertically in terms of like have a ton of ride and have like a big old breaking ball that goes straight down, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And then the arm comes out and you're like, why is that like a 2/3 arm slot? So
right.
Then as a hitter, you're like, okay, so don't worry about the height. It's a 2/3 arm slot. So if it's a 2/3 arm slot, everything's going to go more side to side ish. And he's going to have a good changeup and like a big sweeping breaking ball. He's going to be like a sinker guy. He's going to be like a tall Clark Schmidt.
Right.
Right. Cause you see the arm slot and you say, oh, tall Clark Schmidt. Got it. And then he's a little bit like Joe Ryan or Paul Sewald, where like the movement pattern is a little bit more vertical than you expect given the arm angle. Yeah, so then you like as a batter, you're like, okay. So it's not a tall Clark Schmidt. He's, you know, a tall Paul Sewald.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sounds right. There you go.
And I think you're just as a hitter, you're just like, this is a weird mofo. So I think I would say like, you know, I don't know if we're capturing it all, but I would say that if Ober is better than I think he is, and I think he's league average-ish.
You just overall think that Bailey Ober is league average.
Yeah. I think so.
Interesting.
Because
like in a fantasy way or just like in Major League Baseball way?
Major League starter. Like okay. What's actually average right now is like right around four. So
yeah.
Yeah. Like a 4.1 ERA, good strikeouts, good walks, bad home runs. Basically what he's been. And I just think that's who he is. But if I'm wrong and he's better than that, it's because X percentage deception.
Yeah.
And then X percentage location. And we are considering a new way of doing location plus.
Oh, interesting. How so?
That should make you happy. I here again, I hesitate because I am not the nerd putting it together. Max Bay and Owen McGrattan are my guys.
Hey, this is what I do.
Speak better to it. But there's a Scott Powers presentation that I saw at Sabre Seminar that was about this. And I don't know. It basically has to do with like looking at heat maps of where of pitchers. And I think to some extent it's about like, so it's Bayesian. So Bayesian is like, if you give me five pitches, you know, I'm going to like use comps to fill in the rest of the pitches, you know, Bayesian. That's like sort of Bayesian math is like, I'm going to use another set of data to kind of impute what this will be. And in other words, you could say like, I'm going to take, if I need 200 pitches and you give me five, I'm going to take 195 of league average distribution, add them to your five, you know, and that'll be my answer. So it'll probably be basically league average until I get closer to 200.
Right.
Get that. Yeah. But now think of it spatially so that you've got, you've seen enough heat maps. You know,
oh gosh,
right.
I've seen a fair number. Yes.
So I think to some extent, you could use smaller amounts of data to impute what the shape of that heat map is.
Yeah, right. The general understanding of what they can do.
Yeah. And then I think you can basically start describing the shape of that heat map as opposed to looking at. See, remember Alex exactly came out the piece saying like, we're too fine about this. We're looking at one little box and saying, can you hit this one little box?
Yeah.
This one would be like, how big is your blob?
Yeah. I that's the thing. You're 100% right. I love this.
Yeah.
This is generally like, cool. Is he generally upstairs? Is he generally down in glove side? Is he like,
and are his blobs more
Kirby in this way?
His blobs were like tighter or right. Are they just like, oh God.
Yeah, is it a scatter plot? Is it George Kirby throwing his slider just a little too far out of the zone? And I feel like, oh no, that's gonna come back as a hole over here, right? Is that's not the same thing as scatter plot out of the zone? That's all condensed and more precise, and then we can actually move that blob over.
And then command is like, you know, like I'm looking right now at, I just looked at Bailey Ober's fastball heat map, and now I'm looking at Joe Boyle's.
And it's always Joe Boyle.
Yeah, I just want to look at
it's so perfect. Parts.
And his fastball blob goes all the way from the waist, waste, down to the knees.
Yeah,
you know that's eyeballs to knees. It's and not only that, it's left right bad. Like he's got he's got stuff in the waist zone that's to the left and right. It's not even like he can. So like you could even start describing the blob a little bit like you do with high lock and low lock and all that, right? Where you can be like, oh, he's got like kind of a vertical blob.
Yeah.
Or he's got a horizontal blob. And
right.
So I don't know. I think I probably didn't describe it amazingly, but it is a little bit more of a sort of a heat map blob approach versus I do think there are some limitations to the like, let me take this 3-inch by 3-inch segment of the zone and reward you for going there because
I think that's the way to do it. I think like really having the general concept of what you're doing consistently as opposed to the specific spot is generally what we should be thinking.
It's almost like a question of execution, right?
Right.
Like, can you execute in a sort of tight blob area.
So I'm confusing Eno a ton right now. Because I want to show him something. This is an unbelievable transition. This is why I love the craft so much, guys, because Eno just does the stuff that I want to talk about regardless. What I actually did, this is something that's been bothering me for a while. I wanted to save for this. So I actually reached out.
No way.
Yeah, okay, hold on a second. Hold on. So I reached out to Kyle Bland this morning. This is something I've been thinking about for so long, and it's been driving me up the wall, and I wanted to save it for this show. It's a phenomenal lead-in you gave me here. So what I believe is we are not taking into account waste pitches enough. I've been thinking about this so much, watching Jake Irvin of all pitchers. And I watched Jake Irvin. He's on this amazing run. He just had 10 strikeouts, and like, what's going on against the Guardians? And what I see is a guy who has a fine curveball. It's not like this elite curveball. It's doing well, but it's not this like, oh my gosh, this is an incredible curveball. And then his other pitches, his fastball and his cutters and whatnot, are just not wastes. They're competitive. They're not elite pitches, but they're just generally around the zone. And I think there really is something to be said that I've kind of had in the back of my head. I haven't really assessed that waste pitches they completely change the at-bat, and they change how pitchers approach the zone. They change how well they can attack, what they can throw. Essentially, you see a waste pitch as a hitter, you're getting rid of that from the list of pitches they're going to throw next, because you're not going to be able to, you're not going to look for that in the zone now, because they just clearly don't have it.
Also, like, right? Way less likely to swing at the next pitch, because you're just like, that guy.
Yeah, well, right. There's that too. You can pin in on a certain thing, and if you don't get that, then whatever, right?
Or less likely to swing generally.
Yeah, like, right.
This guy
right.
has no idea where the zone is right now.
Yeah. So essentially, how as at bats go, and also really just speaking about volatility, I talk about it with Taj Bradley of like effectively wild. And why do you allow home runs as much? And why do I not trust that you have this like great caper walk or right now? And it's because you're going to walk a lot of guys next time, or just in at bats, because you throw all these balls, you have to throw these in the zone so much. And it really just changes a ton. And I have so many thoughts about waste pitches. So the first step was to go to Kyle, like, all right, Kyle, at the very least, we got to get on our player pages, just waste percentage and just showcasing. It's a pair of like with strike rate and with mistake rate. Of just saying, how many of these pitches that you throw are just completely uncompetitive? And it's not, we're not doing this by pitch type. This is just overall. So we did two things. We had one by pitch type, one by just overall pitches. Mm-hmm. He asked me actually, Nick, what do you think the general threshold of what makes a guy who throws a lot of waste pitches are or not? And I just threw out a number and I said, it's 10%. And guess what? The guys who are in the top five are like 5.6 to 7.4, and the bottom five are 13.7 to 14.6. So 10
looks like it's about it.
Yeah. Nailed it! And I
will
said,
say, like, looking at these, I'm not sure.
This actually makes all the sense to me.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna go into it a little bit more in a second. Also, I said, look, this is by PLV. We assessed every single pitch, and we say, because we have predictions for every single pitch thrown, mm-hmm. right? And we say, what are the pitches that are 95% likelihood of a ball when it's thrown, right? I also asked Kyle to do 90% just to see if there's something that we feel is a little bit better. But 95 is generally like what a waste pitch is. Sure, you're going to get ridiculous swings from Javier Baez of like, what are you doing, buddy? That no one should be swinging at this, whatever. But, and here we go. This is if it's 90% likelihood, then all of a sudden waste pitch goes up to 10% to 20% essentially. But it's the same guys for the most part, except Bailey Ober is 11.5 now as like the fourth best. If we do that threshold. No. But anyway, so who are these guys at 95% or higher ball
likely
percentage?
Likely to ball, that's right? A waste. And who has the fewest waste pitches?
So the fewest waste pitches are Zach Littell at 5.6. Corbin Burns is 6.5, which honestly shouldn't surprise anyone because, I mean, these are guys like Littell and Burns who are throwing sliders and cutters for strikes, right? And they're getting away with that, and they're getting decent ratios because of it. And Burns also, the strikeout rate going down doesn't surprise me either, because you're throwing these cutters just confidently in the zone, which means I think you're going to generally see higher swing rates on guys that have fewer waste pitches, right? So then you have Michaelis at 6.9. Of course, we know that. He just throws it too much in the zone. Those aren't good pitches. Mm-hmm. Yoshinobu Yamamoto, which I understand because he doesn't throw these four-seamers high enough to then become waste pitches,
mm-hmm.
right? Tanner Houck, with his slider being so competitive all the time, like massive zone rate on that, not surprising. And on the other side of it, it's Andrew Abbott, 13.7% waste pitch. Freddie Peralta, 13.8%. Kyle Harrison at 14. Lance Lynn at 14.3%. And Tristan McKenzie at 14.6. And these are cherry bombs are just flat out bad. Right? So I think we're onto something here. And to go one step further, here's by pitch type. And you can see some of the similar names, but there's some fun ones here. You have Michael Walker.
Wow, Logan Webb has like great command of his changeup. That's great.
Right? Yeah, I mean, Logan Webb and Michael Walker, like, no wastes on these. 90% of these are competitive, which is crazy good. It makes all the sense with Logan Webb's changeup. And Michael Walker, we talk about that being a lead one, right? But Reese Olson with a 2.3 on his slider. Mitch Spence, 2.5 on his slider. Pretty cool. And Miles
that Michaels. Is actually kind of cool because Reese Olson, like, the command is not good generally, but if he does have, he's a lot more viable if he has elite command of his slider.
Right? Yeah. Yeah, and I saw that game last night, Mitch Spence. Now, keep in mind, waste pitch isn't necessarily saying that they're good, right? And I think actually the next step I'm going to do is that we have mistake rate, which is a pitch that you throw that's double the chance of allowing a hit. And I think if you combine waste and mistake rate, you get into something that's pretty cool. And that's what I think is actually going to be the meaningful, like truly meaningful stat of this. But I don't know. This is a fun exploration. Mitch Spence, there's too many that are just in the zone and everything. It's just not that good. Same with Michaelis, you know?
I did a real quick one when you were talking about these players. The first list, Michaelis, Littell, Yamamoto, Burns, how, you know, I did that. Mm-hmm. I put all those guys on a list and I did location plus. And, you know, when I sorted by location plus, Michaelis, Littell, Yamamoto, Burns, and Houck, that's the order by location plus.
Oh, great. There you go. Yeah.
And the bottom, they all had poor location plus. Harrison had average for some reason, but
it's probably, well, the thing is, it's like if it's like ours, like with PLV, this is kind of thing I'm on to talk about with Kyle is like, we so horribly negative a waste pitch. It's like a zero.
Well, so the person I want to talk about on this list is Abbott because it's not necessarily, and maybe Harrison's there, but Lynn, this is like literally his command is going as he's getting older. Like he used to be a command god. So when we see this waste thing, and I think this is actually kind of why the old location plus worked at all is because you're still capturing stuff like this, right? Yeah. You're still like, oh, this is really bad. And you do this a lot. So why do you do this? Right. But I'm looking at Andrew Abbott's spray chart, his heat map of his four seamers. And it's really bizarre. And it actually tracks when I watch him. It's middle.
Yeah.
It's maybe high middle, but not like high, not like over. Like this is middle.
Right.
And then he has a little red blob in the waist zone.
Yeah. It just goes way too out of the zone.
And is there any way this could be on purpose? Because the blob looks pretty nicely well-defined in the middle. And I would say, I don't know if he has great control, but he has great command, but at least he has good control. He gets it in the zone, right?
Right.
And then to have this like weird outlier thing, it's fascinating to me because I don't understand Andrew Abbott. I don't know how
I don't understand him either, man. Andrew Abbott.
He's the guy who makes the least amount of sense to me in baseball. And what's even weirder is this year he's still managing to get good results, but the thing that spoke well to him last year, in spite of everything else, the only thing that spoke well of Andrew Abbott last year was K-minus BB, and that's gone.
Yeah.
Like, how is he having a 3.39 ERA and striking out 18% of the batters he's seen?
Yeah. It makes no sense. We're going to talk more about Andrew Abbott. And do a little bit more of a dive. And of course, about waste pitches and everything after this break. So my quick take on Andrew Abbott is four seamer right. It's super weird. I call it actually, what you're talking about is making the, I want to give a good name for it. I want to call it Triple A Island, where it's like you have a blob in the middle and then blob out of the zone. You know, so you have this little island in the middle that's just like you're going to be sent down to the minors, and then you can't hit the edges, right? You see that a lot in starts where guys can't throw a strike, so then they only throw it down the middle, and it's just you can't do anything, right? And Abbott does that. And I think that's just, I've never considered him a really good command guy. And that's often a product of it. It's like, oh no, I'm messing with these upstairs. I have to throw a strike now, so I'm just going to do this. Abbott's really super reliant on also his curve and his sweeper to really come through on a given night. It is so strange. He had that great run in the middle of the summer, and everyone's like, he's amazing. And I'm like, I don't know why, though. I don't like it. And everyone thought it was crazy. And then he became Andrew Abbott a bit more. I'm with you here. And seeing this waste percentage, I think, kind of explains why we think this, with the command and stuff, and it just won't last.
I'm trying to see here. This just can't be right. I'm trying to look at his swing. I'm just going to look at his fastball. That's what I'm going to do. I'm looking at a swing rate on his fastball. And I need to change the total pitch parameters so that his fastball. There we go. So Andrew Abbott's swing rate on his fastball is 44.9, and the league is 48.9.
Mm-hmm.
If he has poor command and good control and has this middle blob,
yeah,
would it make sense to sometimes throw a waste pitch and convince the hitter not to swing at his fastball so that the next fastball that goes down Broad Street is not swung at?
Well, I mean, the thing is, a waste pitch is like, it's so easy to figure out that that's a waste pitch early. That's why it's 95%.
But if we were saying sort of the thinking of the batter's psychology.
Oh, as I was saying before, they're ruling that pitch out and then all of a sudden there it is or something.
Yeah.
Like, right? Oh, that's interesting.
Like, imagine if you were like middle all the time, then people would, like, one thing that strikes me, this strikes me when I watch Abbott.
Mm-hmm.
Why aren't you swinging? Because he will throw stuff down the middle where you're like, dude, that was a fastball middle. What are you doing up there?
45% swing rate on the four seam, which is 31st percentile. And then when it comes to Z swing, I actually don't have Z swing. I have O swing, which is 30th percentile. For some reason, we don't have Z swing. Swing rates here.
Generally, I didn't.
We should have Z swing on here. I'm surprised we don't.
Do that real quick because I got the queries up. I just have to find where I'm doing it. Okay, so I'm just gonna say in the zone now. Pitches in the zone. Yeah, it would be even more so. All right, pitches in the zone. Total pitch parameters. Okay, so league average swing rate on fastballs in the zone is 69%.
That seems low.
I don't know.
So wait, swing rate on fastballs in the zone?
Yeah. That's pretty high swing rate.
Yeah, well, I mean, generally swing rate, though, does...
You would think that that's what you want to swing at.
Yeah. Right? So...
But anyway, Andrew Abbott's is 68.
Yeah, that's a...
So people aren't swinging at his waste pitches is basically all that happens.
Yeah, right? I mean, is it really helping that much? It's like, it's still an ICR of 42%, which is about league average. It's still a bad homer fly ball rate on that four-seamer. Honestly, the biggest thing that's going on is the changeup is the 16% ICR this year. It's 97th percentile. It's 57% strike rate, which is not as good, but he's not like saving this. He's throwing it early. He has a decent early ball in play.
Says he has a good slider and league average curveball and change. And a bad fastball.
PLV doesn't love it. I mean, again, it's a ton of waste pitches though. Yeah. So there's something weird going on with the four seamer than the changeup. I don't know. I don't buy it at all. I really don't. It just feels so weird. The 71% strike rate on the sweeper. And 16% swing strike rate, low ICR. That's obviously saving him as well. It's a 5.6 PLV. We like that pitch. And I have to, he's thrown it a ton against lefties, 34% usage. It's killing them. And doesn't really throw it against righties. So against righties, it's just that changeup and curve that are getting it done, while the four seamer is just mediocre.
His fastball has average HABAA, 16.6 IVB, 6.7 extension. Like, aren't these all average numbers? And the 928 is below average. Oh, I did see a piece of research that came out of the driveline stuff that I think is interesting for our listeners, which is that it used to be that 94 miles an hour. So he throws 928. It's bad in today's game. 94 used to be where if you graphed like results against the fastball, against velocity, you would see that at 94, home runs allowed and hits allowed start going down and whiffs start going up, like sort of precipitously. So between 90 and 94, it used to be like, every little bit of ELO is a little bit better, but then over 94, bang, that's where you get the good stuff. Well, apparently that new inflection point is 96.
Oh no.
So if
God, that's not fair.
So if you this is also goes to our conversation about fastball fragility, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are, and I don't know if there should be a right left adjustment or at all, but if you look at somebody like Jesus Luzardo,
Oh gosh, 900 runs last night.
And you look at velocity, he lived all last year above 96. He started this year at 96. And his last four starts have dropped below 96. And that's supposedly this line of demarcation.
That's interesting.
We've never really loved the shape on his fastball.
God, we don't love it. That's kind.
Yeah. So he used to just be like, hey, I don't care what you think of my fastball. Like, I throw 96 plus from the left side.
Right.
And now, so for the year, you look at stuff like, say, 100 stuff plus on the four seam fastball, not bad. Well, let me do the last 14 days. 95 stuff plus on the fastball, which has brought everything down because he also has kind of like a slurvy breaking ball. It's not that great of a breaking ball.
Yeah, I asked him what his breaking ball was. He couldn't give me an answer.
Yeah.
He has first percentile extension on his four seamer.
Mm. Which means you'd think that there would be some good benefit on the other side because he's a major leaguer.
Right.
Like sometimes the guys who have the short, don't they like have good changeups or something?
Well, like, usually it's if you have short extension, right? And he does. It's a good changeup. It's a good slider. Those are the things that make him a major leaguer, right? Which I love that you're saying. It's one of my favorite phrases of like everyone's a major leaguer for a reason.
Right.
And both his slider and his changeup have a 24% swing strike rate and are both over a 60% strike rate. So there's your reason for his success.
Some of that could go away with the velo.
Well, right. And I think actually what we saw yesterday, I watched this one. Three innings, he looked great. They're even praising him on the broadcast. They're saying, oh my gosh, Jesus Luzardo, 34 pitches with three innings. He's got everything working tonight. Oh, yeah, yeah. And then what happens is his four-seamer just kind of disappears. And when that happens, when batters can't respect or don't really respect the fastball,
it essentially means that they are
tuned into the slow stuff.
Yeah.
And then they feel confident they can figure out the fastball if it arrives.
Yeah, and they'll fight it off. They'll foul it off. They'll hit it oppo.
And that's the hardest. That's as a pitcher, that is the hardest moment is when.
Because that's the one you can locate to some degree. And so now now if you put the slider in the zone, they're ready for it.
Yeah.
And if you try to nibble with it. You just walk after walk. So is that what happened? Walks.
It was so many changeups and sliders in the zone, and they just destroyed these.
And they hit them because they were anticipating them.
Exactly, and it's such a demoralizing feeling as a pitcher, knowing that you cannot get them out with a fastball. I can't express this enough. You feel weak. You feel like just so insecure, and you're like, well, I'm going to throw slower now. And even though it's going to move and all this kind of stuff, great, it is really demoralizing. And then you overthrow and all of this, and that's a huge, huge deal. He was throwing 95 yesterday, Luzardo, as you mentioned. It was really just that he couldn't locate that thing. And that's actually how he's gotten away with the fastball in the past, is he does what I call the seven as a lefty, which is you go inside to righties and then up along the entirety of the strike zone so that you make a seven if you're looking at the catcher, right? Just going up and then down. And he couldn't do that. If you can't locate this terrible pitch and guys are not scared of it, then the slider and changeup need to be pristine to work. And he was just really, really bad for two innings. It's a really good point, though, at 96 now to have that as a reference point. Because, yeah, I've been so like, oh, it's 94.5, 95. Like, yeah, like Adam Mazur yesterday. I'm actually kind of curious if you were able to watch any of him, because he's a very interesting one to me.
Really, really quickly, though, one last thought about the sitting on certain pitches.
Yeah, please.
I found some evidence in the in our Trevor May cast on Friday of team-wide philosophies when it comes to sitting on certain pitches. Mm-hmm. So I looked at sliders, swing percentage on sliders in the zone on zero strike counts. So those are zero strike sliders. Those are trying to steal a strike.
Yep. Free real estate, as I like to call it.
Supposed to be the fastball count.
Yeah, yeah, right.
And you throw the slider. And so, you know, I looked at team swing rates, and there's a really wide gap. The Rockies lead the league at 56%. They are sitting sliders in
or like off speed in general. Is this including curveballs? Just sliders.
Just sliders.
Okay.
Although I did include sweepers and gyros and so just sliders, but they a 56% swing rate. Like people talk about Corey Seager being aggressive on 0-0 counts. He has a 52% swing rate.
Yeah.
Like 56 is aggressive. The Astros 54.5, the Orioles 54.2. Like they are going to swing on zero strike sliders.
On 0-0, yeah, first pitch sliders,
the Cardinals 36.9%.
Oh, that's interesting.
Tigers 37.4%.
Sorry, that is so funny to me. Just because when I think of the Cardinals, I think of like we're rooted in fastballs.
You know, like we're gonna hit your fastball.
Old
we're
school, fastball. Like it's just fastballs. Oh man, that's so funny.
It's not correlated with success because I put on the slugging rates and the Cardinals slug 641 on sliders in zero strike counts when they do swing. So it could be just a question of, you know, yes, we swing at sliders and two strike counts if they're middle only.
Right.
You know, whereas the Rockies are like, we're anticipating sliders and like, you know, it doesn't have to be middle. We're ready for this. The Rockies slug 757. Well, they also play in Coors, but the Rangers are one of the most aggressive on zero strike sliders. And they slug 687. The Brewers are one of the least aggressive, and they slug 610. So there's not like a straight correlation to success. My point is that if you want to think that players don't really ever sit off speed, you're wrong, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I think that they're definitely team philosophies, team and count philosophies, player and count philosophies, and I bet you that some of this bat tracking stuff is going to give teams a better insight into who's sitting what in what counts.
Oh,
because now they can say this dude in 2-0 counts has like reduces his bat speed for some reason. He is sitting slider, you know,
right.
He's like, you can kind of line up the A, B and C swings and sort of get it into the head of the hitter a little bit. So in any case, almost every stat that comes out eventually helps pitchers.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I want to talk more about this, but before we do, we have to take a quick break. So this is fascinating, but right as you ended there, this is going to help pitchers, right? And what's so interesting to me is the conversation that happens between games of, cool, this is a guy who does X, Y, and Z, that he does this, right? This is a constant cat and mouse of you know, which teams are the ones that actually do their homework and understand, look, it's the top of the third inning now, the lineup's flipping over, he's going to start throwing first pitch curveballs now.
Yeah.
Right? And I imagine the Rangers are a team that very much is in tune with, this guy is a slider guy. This guy is someone who is going to throw a first strike, who's not. And we hear this all the time with pitchers, is that they show a certain approach to a team. We just saw Mitchell Parker get 8/22 slider whiffs against Atlanta. Now he's going to face them again. I don't know if he's going to throw the same thing, right? What is his approach going to be as it goes on? There's a constant feeling of, okay, I look at the Rangers and you're saying, you know, they swing a ton early in counts on sliders. Is that all of them? Is it as a team philosophy? Has all of their guys gone up in this way? Is it just certain players that do it? I used to mention the Astros. I'm thinking Altuve is such a famous guy for this. He does it all the time. Like George Springer, I imagine, would do this too back in the day. So that is the interesting part to me is clearly there are certain teams that are really in on this. And then there's the Cardinals who are just like, we don't care. You know, we don't want to hit a slider anyway. And there is something to be said about that, right? Of like, it's easier to hit a fastball than it is a slider, just in general. It is, for the most part, like it's just not moving as much. This is the pitcher most used to, unless it's an elite one. Generally, fastballs are just harder to hit because it's, or easier to hit because it's just what you know. Yeah. But if it's a really good slider, like, you know, or if it's like a bad one over the plate, they're just trying to lollipop a curveball in there. Like, well, you know, there you go, Alex Cobb. Goodbye.
Sliders are still increasing in terms of percentage year over year. So
yeah,
that means the percentage of bad sliders is increasing. So I think it makes a lot of sense to sit slider in certain situations. So
yeah. Man, that's such an interesting point. We're really gonna have to get into this of, I don't know. I think a player assessment is just gonna get more and more granular. Just of, look, this is the expected sequence we think from the pitcher, and are they a guy who will adapt to it or not? You know, it's kind of one of my goals of PLV is just to say, look, he's going to be throwing down and away sliders. Is this a guy who hits down and away sliders?
Mm-hmm.
He's going to be throwing sinkers inside. Does this guy actually do that or not?
I always think of like, you know, there are, so, you know, back to you were watching Adam Mazur.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, there are pitchers that succeed with not great fastballs. I've just sorted by Stuff Plus backwards and, I don't know, Ranger Suarez, 67 Stuff Plus fastball, 89 Stuff Plus sinker.
Yep.
Aaron Civale is not succeeding right now, but he's always done it with a bad fastball. Chris Paddock is on here. Michael Wacha, Seth Lugo, 80 Stuff Plus fastball, 72 sinker. Yep. Yamamoto, surprisingly, 80 Stuff Plus fastball, 95 sinker.
What? 80 Stuff Plus fastball?
I don't know. That's a little surprising to me, given how great his WBC numbers were. But this is no splits either. Yeah, this is on the year Stuff Plus. Any case, there are people that can succeed with the worst fastball. Of course, I would pick a guy with a great fastball first. Aaron Nola at this point, sure. 98. It's a 98 Stuff Plus sinker, which is actually above average, but
yeah,
you know, it's not the like for the type of pitcher he is. It's a sort of surprising low number,
right?
So when you look at Adam Mazur, you're like, okay, well, the numbers weren't great on the fastball.
Mm-mm.
And it wasn't, I don't think it was a good pitch. You look at, you know, what he was trying to do. I thought he had pretty good command. The location plus didn't like it, but I thought he had pretty good command. And I'm looking at his heat maps.
He did.
He threw the fastball, kind of where he wanted to. He was pretty good glove side high,
mm-hmm.
Which is good because that means he can throw high and away to righties and up and in to lefties.
Yeah.
And that was that's what people said he was in the minors, was not a great fastball, but locates it well. He's got a 45-50 scouting grade from Fangraphs on the fastball, 55 on the slider. And you know, I think that he might adjust a little bit. He's coming from ABS. So, mm-hmm. I see that he has some of these balls are kind of above the zone, but I think ABS calls a little bit higher of a zone, than the umpires.
Oh, that's interesting.
So I think he might've gotten used to, you know, or just generally he wants to be the high lock guy. He's trying to be a high lock guy.
this is the thing I think I like the most about Mazur is that he did have really good overall pitch separation.
Yeah.
Right. Four seamers were with the intent of upstairs. And even though the stuff on them, not that great, like a 0.5 height adjusted VA. So you're minus 0.5, right? Extension was just 6. Not a big extension guy. You can actually, it's interesting when you think about extension guys, you can see it at times.
Yeah, you can see
it. Like where their arm is and where they are in release. And like
sometimes their stride length too.
Yeah. And
like Vince Cone probably had, you know, 7.7.
Right. Oh my gosh. And then you have IVB was at 16 plus, which is okay. That's not so bad. That's like average-ish, a little slightly above average.
Vila was
95, but the thing is the extension takes average. It down, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So
those sliders, I look at those sliders in the dirt, and I just think if you're doing a pretty good job locating your fastball, sliders in the dirt could also be opening start jitters.
Like oh yeah, no, that's
he's so
that's
a little the thing afraid. I think of some of the hitters. Yeah. Like some of those sliders need to be closer to the zone.
Well, yeah. Overall, I think I don't think you saw so many just ridiculous. Like, oh my gosh, he doesn't know where this thing is going. Like you normally see from MLB debuts. I mean, I generally throw away command, right? As you mentioned with MLB debuts, right? It's the jitters.
Skeens' command was worse.
It was terrible. It was 4 innings in like a 2 whip and something like that. It was you don't want to do that. But Mazur in the minors, known as a command guy, I remember even hearing in the broadcast, this is really the interesting part, was they said, oh, he's a mini George Kirby. And I said, oh, I guess I can understand that because George Kirby's four-seamer isn't really the greatest stuff pitch.
Doesn't have a good shape. He doesn't. I don't know what his extension is off the top of my head. But
the command of the four-seamer and general the intent, as you're talking about the blob of location, really good here. And I do see a situation that Mazur's throwing changeups, sliders, curves off of that tunnel of the four seamer up top. Blake Snell blueprint, keeping the four seamer up. Everything else comes down. It was only a 45% strike rate on the four seamer, which is atrocious. You want to see at least a 60%, if not really a 65% on your fastball. But he threw a lot of strikes on the slider, even the ones that were underneath were, some of them were really nice that he just went back and did the same thing again.
I don't think he's going to be a great pitcher.
Yeah, I'm with you here. Of like, he's not like an electric. Oh my gosh, Adam Mazur start. This is amazing. Mm-hmm. I think he is a viable pitcher, that's kind of what I'm getting at because it's enough of a kitchen sink and enough like general precision that cool. You get the slider goes over here and the changeup goes there and the curveball's over here and the fastball's. You know, it's all works. It's just not something that's going to be like, cool, this guy's going to just dominate in a certain day or so.
I bet you it was like the first time he walked 4 guys in an outing. I mean,
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
You're looking at these walks per 9 rates.
And when you think about really low walk guys, I think Mazur has a more complete arsenal than some of those guys that we know in like the bottom levels of like SP5s and stuff like that. Right.
Yeah.
But yeah, it just doesn't have the electricity that you generally want from a rookie.
Yeah, this is interesting. I mean, from like a fantasy standpoint or whatever, like it's not something that I would go trade for. Like in shallower leagues, I'd be really careful and just be looking at where he's starting and who's he's starting against. But in those like 15 team leagues where you're putting money down on free agents, he might be one of those guys where you put, you know, $7, $8, $9 out of $1,000 on him. And you're happy you did, you know?
Yeah, no, that's there's he's certainly could be a Toby this year. The other one, the last one I'm going to go for you because we're running out of time is DJ Hers, who also made his MLB day yesterday. And this is for the Nationals. He was honestly, when I did my preseason rankings, I did a top 400, which I remember on like Facebook, they're like, why, how do you, I can't even name 100. I'm like, okay, well,
did you put
there are all these guys that come up and get replaced all year. And DJ Hers, I actually said, could be the second best pitcher on the Nationals this year. Because like, I didn't believe in Josiah Gray. There's Jake Irvin and Corbin and Trevor Williams in there. And it's Mackenzie Gore.
Nice strikeout rates in the minors. Terrible walk rates. Yeah.
Right. So the thing about DJ Hers is that he's a southpaw with this 94 mile per hour fastball that comes in reasonably flat. It's not the flattest I've seen, but it's a 1.3. height adjusted VA. It's also a good IVB of 16. When you see those two kind of combined, you're like, oh, near 7 extension 2. Like it all is generally good,
yeah,
except it's about 93, 94. And the thing is, the locations of these yesterday, again, MLB debut, not really where you want it to be, more like middle and down as opposed to middle and up. However, there are some nice changeups that we saw. It's like a 2-0 changeup to Pete Alonso that was really good, because especially MLB debut stuff is the funniest thing. I say this all the time. Like, the first batter of an MLB debut is the most stressful thing in the world to me.
Yeah, they always show the parents and the parents are crying and
not about that, but that's funny too. Is the fact that generally the first pitch is not going to be a strike, okay? And generally the second pitch is not going to be
a strike. The hardest pitch they've thrown all year,
right? And what happens is I will always go back to Steven Matz, where Steven Matz MLB debut in Citi Field was facing Brandon Phillips. He gets to a 3-1 count. I was like, I think it was 3-0. He throws a fastball. Brandon Phillips takes it. It's a fastball, whatever. Brandon Phillips and everybody in the stadium knew the next pitch was going to be a fastball, because there's no way Steven Matson wants to walk him. So what does he do? He throws a fastball right down the middle, and Brandon Phillips hits a home run. Like, it's always such a high woba, I think, on like the first batter of an MLB debut. I bet Sarah Lance could look that up. And in heartbeat, 100% right, I'm sure. This one, what do you know? Francisco Lindor, 3-0, takes a fastball in there. It's like pretty hittable. He doesn't swing at it fine. Next pitch is 93 down the pipe, and he hits a double that it was almost a triple. And it's like, no! I hate the first batter in the game. And then 2-0 on Alonso, and throws a changeup, and it like swings over. I'm like, oh, that's the good changeup. So DJ Hurz is kind of interesting. It's not a bad cutter, not a bad changeup. If you can command the four-seam, that's cool. He's an interesting one. It's just, what is the command? As you mentioned, the terrible walk rates in the minors.
I don't like that he likes to throw his four-seam low.
Yeah, I don't know if he likes to do it.
yeah. Maybe this is just where it works. If he targets higher, it's just all waste pitches.
Or he just couldn't. You know, I mean, we see that all the time too. I think Tyler McGill wants to throw high four seamers and he just can't right now. MLB debut. I don't know. We'll see what he does. He gets the Marlins after Atlanta, and you might see DJ Hurst come to his own.
Wouldn't be able to throw him against Atlanta.
No, not a chance. But it's good. I don't know. This is like the fun part of the year, I think, in June, because you start to see these opportunities arise for all these young guys. And sometimes they just surprise us, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All right. So hopefully we get some more interesting prospects soon. But, you know, I think that's going to do for this episode of The Craft. I can't wait to really explore more of this waste pitch stuff with you. The new location stuff. So I think the more that we can kind of get a general sense of a baseline of like, hey, look, you are generally competitive and throw more competitive pitches. We can get an understanding of a lot of those middle pitchers who are like sometimes good and sometimes bad. Like, right. Because they're not putting themselves in holes as much as other
and
guys.
Also the idea is that the talk by Scott Powers was called a predictive pitching plus. And so his idea was that if we do location plus this way, we can get location plus predictive quicker.
Ah, that's great. Cause what is it? 280 pitches now? Something that stabilizes.
It's more like 400.
Oh gosh. It was so nice.
Stuff plus is like 100. I think location plus is like 300, something like that.
Okay.
But, I mean, yeah, for us, what's the difference? I mean, like 300 is, you know, for four or five starts.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I mean, right. We always say that too, of just like, you need three starts to be something.
But also predictive is a sliding scale, because, you know, it's probably more predictive with more data, but.
Right. What are you working on this week?
Just a lot of long-term stuff. Probably shouldn't say.
Okay, cool. That sounds great.
I'll have a Friday thing about underperforming batters on The Athletic, I think.
Definitely take a look at that, guys. Now is the month of like planning for next year completely. The first two months are like, make sure everything is fine. We have a good start of the year, and now it's okay. We got to start looking to 2025 and beyond again.
Just also in terms of writing, like a couple, like just longer projects that are, you know, I don't have much in between.
Yeah. Well, we're all looking forward to it for you. Obviously I, you know, listen to Rates and Barrels, of course, for, with the Enosaurus. My name is Nick Pollock, and we'll talk again next week about the craft of pitching.